March 10th. Today, quite to my surprise, turned out to be one of the best days of my life. I don't have time or all the words to fully tell you why, so a summary will have to do. About 5 weeks ago, on February 4th, right after the Super Bowl, which I enjoyed, I went to bed feeling a bit off. I woke up the next day with the flu, this year's version, bad. I spent the next 6 days in bed with a very high fever, 103.04, without any appetite for food. That was, I see now, too sick to know how sick I was. I spent all of that time drinking bottle after bottle of water and changing my clothes and bedclothes when they got soaked through with sweat. The fever broke in stages that Friday and Saturday. When I finally came to, I lost 10 pounds, about 5 more than I had to spare, and looked, even to me, like a ghost. I tried but failed to go to work on the following Tuesday, too weak and whacked out to care. I did head off to work that Thursday, realizing while I was driving in that my distance vision was significantly compromised. I'm assuming I didn't notice it much before that because I was at home, everything close, and hadn't driven. By the time I got to work, I was quite concerned. By the end of the day, as my vision devolved, I was frightened. In the short run, because I still had to drive home. In the long run, well, that goes without saying. I waited about 5 more days before I went to my doctor. Yes, I am that stubborn. Assuming, or at least hoping, it would all go away. It didn't. So I went. After several days of tests, I was given a series of possible causes and paths to resolution. I'll only describe one of them, by far the best, because it seems to be the actual one. Gradual self-resolution. Yesterday, I drove to the grocery store. Today, for the first time in about 6 weeks, I drove out to Boyce Park and took my full walk, having been building up to it over the last 10 days or so with longer and longer walks around my neighborhood. I couldn't believe I was there again. Just cried on and off as I walked, saw some of my favorite things again. I was that happy. The Chinese, I know from my friend Marion, whose mother died the same year that Carol did, which led her to my book, which is how I got to know her, attach a special significance to the third anniversary of a loved one's passing. I don't know much about why or what the protocols are. All I know is that Carol died 3 years ago on February 17th, which marked the nadir of my descent last month. I was too worn out to be racked with grief. I acknowledged the moment, steeled myself through it, and woke up alive the next day. Not long thereafter, a few days maybe, I could sense that something about me was different, had changed. As I began to heal, I realized I didn't feel that familiar, ceaseless rage seething inside me, the rage I said in this fall would never go away. It had, maybe, been boiled off or sweated out of me, I thought, by that fever. Now, almost 3 weeks later, it hasn't returned. So I'm assuming and hoping it won't. I don't know if that's for better or worse. I'm just happy it's gone for now. And perhaps, if I'm lucky, for good. The day before I got sick, the CD player in my car went on the fritz. It would neither play nor eject the disc I had inserted. I preview and then listen to repeatedly all the music I record, my own songs and covers, on that player as I drive, a process I really enjoy. So I tried everything I could think of to fix it. Spent a half an hour or so, this, that, to no avail. When I started to get better, I went out again and again. Yes, I am that stubborn. And tried to figure out what was wrong. This, that, nothing. After several tries over a few days, I was finally able to get the disc to eject. But nothing would play. Just a CD error message over and over. I assumed it was broken for good. But from time to time since then, yes, I am that stubborn, I have slipped in a disc just to see what would happen. CD error every time. Today, almost mindlessly, I did it again, and the music started to play. I was stunned, amazed, deeply grateful. Not really because a silly CD player now worked, but because I felt it was an index to other things in my life starting to work, like my inner music playing again, like my appetite. I've been eating like a horse and have gained the weight back, like my ability to go to work and teach up to my standard again, and above all, like my vision. I was thinking today on my drive out to the park about famous historical losses of vision as they pertain to spiritual matters. St. Paul's sudden blindness, which, if my recollection serves me, is attributed in the Bible to his being a mindless prick. Or the composer of Amazing Grace, who wrote that famous line, "I was blind, but now I see," in his elder years as he swabbed floors of churches trying to assuage his guilt over having been involved in the slave trade. I'm neither a saint nor a reformed slaver, but I was blind, and now I see. So I will tell you a few things I saw today on my walk. I saw the sun, so rarely there this last month or so. I saw the trees I love and that loved me. I saw the same path I most often walk on, beginning to end, just magical. The only detail I will report is this. The dead leaning tree on which I carved my name and post-Carol birth date a few months ago and told you about in an earlier essay was now down on the ground, laying across the path. I thought it would take years to find its way there. It took just weeks. Like me, February was too much for it. I had to climb over it to keep walking. Now, unless you know exactly where I had carved it, you will never see what I wrote. Kind of half hidden, down near the ground, on the right side. In a few weeks, this spring, the county workers will chainsaw the tree out of the way to clear the path. My inscription will return to the earth quickly thereafter. I was thrilled. I thought right then. The man that was born again that day, November 17th, 2015, 9 months after Carol died, died again last month, after a long illness. I am not him any longer. I have no idea who or what I am or who or what I will become. That remains to be seen. And thankfully, I will be able to see it. I was trying while I walked today to think of a poem to go along with what I was thinking, feeling, one of mine, someone else's, no matter. I couldn't think of one, not even a line, not even a word that seemed to fit. It was sublime. Longinus, who wrote the book on sublimity a couple of millennia ago, the one that inspired the romantic poets a couple of hundred years ago, basically, to my way of reading him at least, says that sublimity is not intrinsic to language or linguistic artifacts, no matter how powerful or beautiful they are. When I teach his book, I always use the analogy of a rocket ship. For Longinus, a great bit of writing is simply a vehicle that, if well enough designed and crafted, can transport us right to the very edge of the medium it is made from. Those words, still held captive in their tiny province on the spectrum of human life in this world. Figurative language is the most powerful such booster, capable of thrusting us up to the very edges of our babbling biosphere. Once there, we just need to step outside, and we will go into orbit on our own, skimming off into the majesty of deep space where we will float weightlessly, silently, the gravity of diurnal discourse too weak to pull us down until we want or need to come home again. It takes a little courage to take that step, but the payoff is magnificent, an eternal here and now that is not parsed by grammar or syntax, those slaves of time we need for more mundane communication down here. There is no clear inside or outside, just being. As I have said, we have historically come up with a few vague words to describe that spacey state. I've never, of course, actually traveled into space, but I've seen the pictures taken from there. The Earth, this generous caretaker, which seems like all there is when we are fully in its embrace, looks suddenly so small. Beautiful, blue, but fragile. So, so small. And the space it navigates its tiny little circuit within is as close to infinite as a human mind can apprehend. Here, we make things with words, very useful things, often beautiful things, sometimes so much so, so overfull of themselves, that they can convey us to the brink of this transcendent elsewhere. That is where I was today, right outside of words, and then everywhere outside of words, where crying, laughing, or just staring incredulously at what is right before our eyes is the most appropriate media for expression. It was sublime. The last day I went to work before I got sick, I went to hear the talk of a young woman competing for one of the jobs we were seeking to fill in our program. She does archival work related to historically black colleges and universities in America. Important research at a volatilely race-inflected moment like ours. I thought her performance was stunning. At one point, she talked in detail about the late 60s, and then vividly and passionately about what happened on February 13, 1969, which was, by happenstance, my 20th birthday. She is maybe in her mid or late 20s, so this is all history to her. I was there, remember everything. I didn't cry audibly, but the tears just ran down my cheeks. So moved was I by her commentary and by my own memories. They are running down my cheeks now as I write this. I won't go into the personal details of all this. I don't want to talk about it, and you don't want to hear it, believe me. The following week, her competitor for the job made his presentation, which I missed with my illness. I heard, in advance of the decision meeting, which I knew I would not be well enough to attend, that he was stunning too, that while both were much admired, the young man seemed the favorite. I'd been planning to file my retirement papers during the week I got sick, but figured that could wait until I got better. One night, though, just struck me. Maybe if my chair had official notification that I would not be returning, I mean on paper, signed and done, he might be able to persuade the dean that hiring these two excellent candidates now, while they were right in front of us, would be prudent, assuring constancy, ongoing quality in what we do here, and more practically, avoiding an expensive search next year. I asked him. He said it might. I wrote the letter, emailed it. He went to the dean the next day, and she said yes. I will never again see either of these good young people, but one of them, I will always believe, will be here because I am not. I'm so happy about that. I know, both from my own children and the many, many undergraduate and graduate students I work with, how hard it is for young people to get established, find satisfactory employment in the current culture. I am thrilled that I made room for one, and that I know who she is. About 30 years ago, I had a dream in response to some question or crisis either Carol or I or both of us was confronting, the details of which I have no recollection of. But it had something to do with the frustrations of trying and seemingly always failing to find what one thinks one wants, that bulwark of the human condition. In this dream, a disembodied voice told me exactly this. In order to receive the gifts you want, you must first learn to receive the gifts that are offered. That's it. Though I remember the emphasis on and the importance of the words receive, gifts, and learn in that sentence, as if this is not an instinctively simple process. These are not the just desserts of our birthright, and we don't either get the ones we want on our own initiative or have to accept the more meager-looking alternatives that come in their stead. I took those words to heart. It is, I discovered, very hard to live up to them. The temptations of wants, needs, dreams, and desires of getting and accepting always so distracting. I could see in my own life how often I simply ignored or didn't even notice in the first place, which is way worse, the gift that was right in front of me, the person, the situation, the place, the thing, brushed aside as if it were nothing because it wasn't exactly what I wanted right then. Even though I came in time to see it might be someone else's ideal. Even though I also came in time to see it could have been my ideal if only I had taken the time to notice and value it. That is so stupid, so wasteful, so selfish, so arrogant, and quite often so rude, the experience that any person, place, or thing inevitably feels when it is deemed inadequate. Not because of what it is, but because it is not something else. I could see the other side of it too. How often what I am, what I do, what I have to offer has been dismissed, rejected, ignored, or worst of all again, not even noticed. I've been dumbstruck, sometimes depressed, by the way so many people have averted their gaze from me, deked out of their way to avoid me, assuming I wouldn't notice during these last 3 dark years. I know why they did that, but it was so stupid. What they have missed out on is not just the nuances of my astonishing journey, the kinds of details that don't last more than a few days or weeks, and I can tell a pretty good story when someone is willing to listen, but also what I now know, have come to know, things almost beyond comprehension, that if they had just stopped with me for a few minutes every now and then, asked the question and listened, would have astounded them. I vowed to myself that if I ever come across someone like me in a situation like mine, I will spend all the time I can learning everything they have to teach me. There are 2 ways to learn in this world. The easy way, by finding, talking to, and listening to someone who really knows. Or the hard way, by the trials and errors, 2 pretty good words for it, of your own experience. If you're waiting for perfection, obsessing over things that don't really matter, avoiding those who know precisely because they know what you think you don't want to or won't ever need to, you're doing it the hard way. Stop right now. Well, that's impossible, I guess. It's just not that easy. As Socrates says, being good as a one and done, that's impossible. Becoming good for him, though, isn't. And it is a never-ending and deeply worthy process. Learn to receive the gifts that are offered. They are right in front of you. Could be me, could be anyone, could be anything. That tree you are standing beside, everyone and everything knows. That is so much the easier way, believe me. You might think that tomorrow, next month, next year, you'll find a worthier person, a more valuable thing, a more appealing place, the ideal moment. So why waste time on the seemingly lesser that's right there, right now? I'm not saying you won't find those other things. I know people who, despite their being rude and stupid, do seem to get pretty much everything they want. But of course, they are and will always remain rude and stupid. Too big a price to pay, I'd say. Way too big. Conversely, you might think that the darkness will never come your way. So why bother stopping to learn about it, maybe tempting it toward you in the process? Again, I'm sure there are people who are lucky enough to stay always in the light. But it's not something you want to count on. I spent the last 3 years filled with rage. I probably had to be like that to survive. I was very mad at God. Maybe he or she noticed. Maybe he or she didn't. No matter. Now I'm not. If you crossed my path during that time, I was probably very mad at you. Maybe you noticed. Maybe you didn't. No matter. Now I'm not. I was very mad at myself. I didn't notice that. You're probably smart enough to figure out all the reasons I was and didn't. I wasn't. No matter. Now I'm not. I was never mad at Carol. I know what she suffered here, and what a relief it must have been for her to be released from all that. I have no idea what happens on the other side, but I have a faith now that if she is ongoingly present there, she is happier and being well cared for. That tiny little space that stayed safe from my rage, the one she left behind for me to stand in, is what saved me. Love, real love, the right kind of love, is so rare in this world. I have no idea why. It is the only thing that should matter, and quite often, it's the last thing down the list. I had that. If you have that, or have had that, hold on to it, or the memory of it. When it gets all the way dark, that is the light that will let you see. And it will save you.